Good evening and welcome to RCR 360. My name is Alistair Harding, and tonight on the show, I'm going to be joined in a short while by Marie Buskey for a very special show. Because for the past year and a half, I've been working on a new documentary. It's all about managed retreat, and it's finally finished. And tonight, RCR 360 is going to be the premiere of that film. Managed retreat, if you don't know, is one of the biggest stories facing New Zealand today. And I say that from both sides of the debate. If you listen to the climate change activists, managed retreat is the solution to the existential problem of the climate crisis. And if you listen to the other end of the spectrum, it's the end of the beach batch, the clifftop home, and property rights. It's a story about the reorganisation of the Resource Management Act that is undergoing right now, which will include, once it's finished, a Climate Adaptation Act. And if the proposals that are being mooted at the moment go through, it's also going to be the reorganisation of New Zealand, because it will impact property rights across the board. But I can't tell you the whole story right now because it will ruin the film for you. So instead, let's skip the preamble tonight and get straight into it. Marie, good evening. Welcome to the show. How exciting is this? We've had a week off and now we've got a movie premiere.
Well, I've had a week off. You've been absolutely burning the midnight oil, creating this incredible film.
Yeah, it's been a tough ask to actually get it done, but I'm really glad we have, and we'll watch it in a short while. But first, just before we begin, I want to look backwards a little bit to our previous episode, which was all about digital manipulation. And in the meantime, in the last 2 weeks, since we last went to air with that topic, there's been some really interesting news about the manipulation of all of us. The German Secret Service and the UK Secret Service have both come out with reports saying that they knew that the COVID virus came from a lab in Wuhan back in 2020. And this is in complete contradiction to what we've all heard. We were told, on no uncertain terms, that the lab leak theory was a conspiracy theory. And now it turns out it was true, because the CIA said it a few months ago as well, didn't they?
Oh, let's not let the facts stand in the way of a good ideological, you know, narrative. Alistair, come on.
But the point that I'm trying to make is that we were talking about digital manipulation, how we are manipulated, and a lot of people would tell you that, no, you're being paranoid, you're not being manipulated. But here we have two really, you know, watertight cases of governments manipulating us on a global level.
Yeah, and even media outlets that promulgated this, like the New York Times, starting to walk back narratives like, we might have got things a little bit wrong at the time, but not quite a soz, not soz.
Yeah, the problem is, though, is that they need to actually atone for that, because they did cause a huge amount of damage worldwide, on social levels, on financial levels, economic levels, everything, didn't they?
Oh, they certainly did. And then just the fear, you know, and the fact that they've gone and taken the social fabric, and then they've put such tremendous pressure on it, and it is tissue thin at best and completely torn asunder at worst in many, many places.
Okay, so with that all said, and we've looked back, and if you do want to see that episode of digital manipulation that Marie and I talked about just a couple of weeks ago, do go onto their website at rcr.media so that you can catch up with that episode, and also all the other episodes we've done on fluoride, on democracy, on trust in the media. There's a lot there that we've already done with RCR 360. But tonight, RCR 360, we've got a special night because we have a documentary film. It's all about managed retreat. And when I go around, I've been making this film for about a year and a half. And when I go around the country interviewing people and telling people about it and so on, the biggest comment that I get is, what's managed retreat? Well, managed retreat is the preemptive moving people away from climate change disasters that may happen in the future. Literally, what the government is doing is drafting laws at the moment, the Climate Adaptation Act, which will be part of the revamped Resource Management Act, to allow for predicting in the next 100 years disasters that may or may not happen and moving people away from those areas. Marie, Did you know about Managed Retreat before this? And what are your thoughts about Managed Retreat?
Only very obliquely. And I only knew about it because, of course, for those that may not know, I live in Hawke's Bay. And, of course, we have Cyclone Gabrielle, which was a little over 2 years ago here. And so Cyclone Gabrielle, I have to admit, once that occurred, one of the first things that happened were those that jumped on and said, this is climate change. Mm. And then along came the term managed retreat. And I'm thinking, what is this managed retreat? So that was really all I knew about it. And we've had since then things like coastal inundation plans and flood risk management plans and all these things from the council who, in a rush, are wanting to be seen that they are aware of some of the issues that are around. Because, of course, you've got hundreds, if not thousands, of people that got displaced during that event, and it's tragic for them, and you're not wanting to have that happen again. Yeah. But what does it actually mean? And I think most people have no idea.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I heard about it for the first time. I've actually got a vivid memory of this. When, after Cyclone Gabrielle, I came down to your part of the world and I was doing some filming, driving around the area, looking at the devastation of the area. I especially remember being in Esk Valley and just seeing the mud all the way up to the gutters of houses. It was heartbreaking. But I also remember listening to the radio as I was driving around, and that was the first place I heard about Managed Retreat. They came up with that solution very, very quickly. It was James Shaw, it was Grant Robertson, it was Chris Hipkins talking about it almost right from the very beginning. It was, you've seen the problem firsthand, now here's the solution. And so in that respect, it's always felt a little bit predetermined to me, which is what made me want to make this film.
It's nothing like having a solution that you need to find a perfect problem for, is there, Alistair?
Yeah, but I do find it a little bit absurd to think that we're looking, and what you'll see in the film is that we're actually looking 100 years into the future and to predict these things. And then what's happening is people's house values and insurance premiums are being affected by this. So this is the problem. But I don't want to give too much away. Why don't we just watch the film now? Let's launch the film. And this is the premiere of Managed Out, the RCR In Focus documentary, here for the first time on RCR 360. It's the premiere of the film. Let's take a look and we'll come back and we'll talk about it afterwards, Marie.
Tonight, the United States is in the midst of an extreme weather nightmare.
The world is indeed in a state of climate emergency.
Well, the storm surge is flexing. We're about an hour into being in this eye wall.
All over the world, they've done an incredible job at scaring everybody with the idea of climate change.
This morning, a new study warns sea levels are rising in the south.
But 3 degrees of global warming would be catastrophic.
The number of people in harm's way is likely to increase.
The United Nations warns that the Earth is now in an era of global boiling.
It is global boiling that has begun.
Humans are to blame.
How dare you? What is worth more, art or life?
Stop! 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 Stop!
Every day the temperature rises, depending on who you listen to, either figuratively or literally. And here in New Zealand, it's no different, where wartime language is being used to predict an invisible subterranean invader from the future.
It won't just be waves crashing into homes, but an attack from underground.
But it will also work in an invisible way, paralyzing towns and cities from underground.
And in climate change terms, it's happening at light speed.
Like most people, I thought we had more time. But we don't. We literally have a decade or two before you would look at some sort of managed retreat.
As you'll soon see, the story about the industry of managed retreat is also the story of climate change. And it's not just a New Zealand story, it's a global one. But for many of us here in New Zealand, it starts here in the Hawke's Bay, because this is where most of us heard the words managed retreat for the first time, in the wake of Cyclone Gabrielle, together with the heartbreaking images of people's homes overcome by mud. Because it was here in 2023, after Cyclone Gabrielle, that the media and the politicians reacted to the problem with their solution.
New Zealanders may look back on this week as the moment we began seriously reckoning with climate change.
And this two words New Zealanders are going to get used to hearing over the next few years is managed retreat.
The government is grappling with a concept known as managed retreat. It's the process of moving communities out of the most vulnerable areas.
We need to make sure that the process that we've got in place there is fair and is transparent. So in some cases there'll be extensive damage, but it will be safe to rebuild. In other areas we may have to make some tough calls about managed retreat and about not rebuilding in those areas.
Who's going to decide whether those people are going to have to leave in the future if we have to go down managed retreat?
Yeah, look, I cannot emphasise this enough. It has to be a local community-driven decision. The point of the upcoming legislation that we've got is to enable communities to make those decisions, because the effects of climate change will be presenting differently in different places.
And so that's where we start, because that's one of the key drivers that begins all of this, the concept of community-led. Because managed retreat, where people are moved off their properties, has only ever been done in two places at scale in New Zealand. Once in Christchurch after the 2011 earthquake, and once here at Matata on the Bay of Plenty coast, where in May 2005, after heavy rain, a debris flow swept down this ravine and wiped out this neighbourhood. On that occasion, it wasn't claimed that climate change did it, but nonetheless, the lessons learned here showed that if you want to move a community, you've got to convince them that they want to move. And that's a lesson, you could say, that started with this phone call on the evening of the 18th of May, 2005.
What's your address, sir?
18A.
Yeah.
Jim Elliott Drive.
Are you still in the house, sir?
Yes, we're in the ceiling and we need rescuing.
Okay. How many people in the house?
Five. Two adults, one teenager and two babies.
And the house has been washed away, has it?
It's been washed away and hit the neighbour's house. And we might be floating out to sea because the sea's not very long away. 50 metres.
Right. No, we've got two babies in the house.
Yep.
How old are they?
Two and one.
Okay, we're actually dealing with it. Just the people in the area will be there to help you, but I want you to stay in the ceiling.
Yep.
Okay, just stay where you are. You're not on your own, mate. Just everyone's in the area. Just tell your family, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Hurry.
Okay, I understand. Bye-bye.
The mother of Ethan Worth who made that phone call is Michelle Beach, and much of how we frame this story about managed retreat is also her story, about why her family were in the way of that debris flow, and what happened that day in Matata, what caused it, and also what has happened since.
I remember looking out the kitchen window at this kind of brown wobbly thing coming down my cousin's drive next door, and I called my husband and I said, hey, what's this coming down Marilyn's drive? And he looked and saw what was coming and thought, oh, we can't drive out there. So me and my three children climbed into the ceiling, and about 4:45 I think the house actually bobbed up off its foundations and started floating. And we were on an eddy, because the way the water came, it came past like that and it whipped around in front between that neighbour's house and shed. And that kept us circling like that, round and round. Every now and then we'd crash into the neighbour's house, and we did that for 3.5 hours. And then my husband broke down the wall and we climbed into the neighbour's stairwell window. My husband gave very graphic details. He was standing in the roof looking at the neighbourhood and what he could see. He described as the boulders came over the railway lines, and every time there was a lightning flash, he would see the rocks coming. All the cars were floating. Our white family Commodore, it took off doing about 60 k's, he reckoned.
So at the time, where did you think the water was coming from?
I had no idea. I remember looking at my husband with like bewilderment. I just couldn't believe it.
Where it came from was the ravine above the beach home on the other side of State Highway 2. and according to the official report of the event, it was caused by a band of intense rain that passed over the catchments behind the coastal settlement of Matata, triggering many landslips and several large debris flows, which with their associated flooding destroyed 27 homes and damaged a further 87 properties. And that's an account that Michelle Beach agrees with mostly, except for one key point. In your opinion, was this a natural event?
No, not in my opinion. It was a disaster waiting to happen. Before it became the district council, when it was still the county council, they used to send people up into the streams with chainsaws to regularly to cut up debris that fell into the stream, and they stopped doing that at some point. And so the build-up for 20 years or so was enough to build these big dams. And that explains how all that huge body of water came down. I think there's so much lying that's attached to this event that we'll probably never know the truth.
To be fair, the official report does mention the dams, but the authors of the report also say that any evidence of the dams actually comes from after the landslides and after the debris flows. But it's also obvious to anyone who looks at the photographs from the disaster that there was a build-up of logs and boulders that got swept down onto the beach neighbourhood. And from that perceived difference in events, a distrust in the authorities grew, which was then exacerbated in the following years when at first the residents were told they could rebuild, before being told 7 years later, in 2012, that there was no engineering solution for the problem and that they had to move on, which was something that wasn't fully achieved until 2022. So it was pretty clear you had to move.
Yep. Well, I felt like I couldn't go back there because of the terror that was attached to what we'd been through. And it wasn't until I realised that actually the council were really complicit in this that I thought, hang on. Maybe it's not that bad down there because actually the danger's been mitigated because the dams are gone. So actually it's probably not that dangerous after all. So maybe I should move back. It was my inherited land. My dad gave it to me.
But they didn't want to admit that's how it happened. Therefore, what's the solution?
Voluntary retreat. Voluntary retreat was where they pay you out for your land and you go away quietly and buy somewhere else.
Okay, so you took it?
No.
Why not?
Well, by that time I was starting to cotton on to the fact that they were lying to me. No one took it, I don't think. I can't think of anyone who wanted to go. And then because we weren't volunteering to retreat, it turned into managed retreat.
And what does that mean?
It means you don't get a choice. We're going to manage you off there. We don't care how you feel about your inherited land or whatever. I had until October 2020 to either accept the minuscule amount that they were offering me or get nothing and we'll take it anyway.
And that's the sort of human emotion that echoes around this topic of managed retreat, because this is a story about people's homes and there's not many things that are more personal than that. Which is why when politicians began talking about managed retreat, they also started telling us it needs to be community-led. In other words, if people need to be moved, there's no way anyone wants a repeat of the 17 years it took to clear out the residents at Matata.
Yeah, look, I cannot emphasise this enough. It has to be a local community-driven decision. Climate change will be presenting differently in different places.
But we've also got to put some more context into this story, because while the examples of managed retreat are usually the examples like Matata or Christchurch or the Hawke's Bay, where homes have already been destroyed, this conversation today is actually about the threat of disasters in the future due to climate change, which means to say the managed retreat discussion is now about preemptively removing people from places such as coastal areas where the risk of climate change is deemed so certain that whole communities might need to be relocated. Let that sink in. Managed retreat is about managing the perception of a disaster that hasn't yet happened. And that's not an exaggeration. Amongst the people that shape the policy of this country, there is so much certainty now around how bad climate change is going to be, that there's already a new law being drafted in Parliament named the Climate Adaption Act that is paving the way for preemptive managed retreat. And it's being shaped by the language of certainty used by lobby groups like the Environmental Defence Society, who stated in their February 2023 report into managed retreat that weather-related disasters are becoming increasingly commonplace, and that we know that such events will increase over time, and that these changes in the climate place more and more humans in harm's way. And so the solution, they say, to address this unprecedented challenge, the government has proposed the Climate Adaption Act, which is intended to address the complex and distinctive issues associated with managed retreat. And who could argue with that when it's been drummed into us by the media that we're under attack? Recently, in March 2025, Radio New Zealand even confidently predicted a rise in temperature of 5 to 6 degrees, which is a rise that would threaten the extinction of humanity. And it's that certainty that the Ministry for the Environment is working with as well. And their community-led retreat and adaption funding issues and options report that relies heavily on the reports by the Environmental Defence Society, it's stated with certainty that New Zealand is getting warmer, sea levels are rising, and severe weather is happening more and more often. And in the future, the report claims, some places will also be reclaimed by the sea. And so with that certainty, the Ministry for the Environment say we need a proactive adaption plan that enables an enduring system to enable retreat before disaster. And as if that case wasn't strong enough, there's also the other threat, the threat of climate-related litigation. And to give you an example of that, take this case, a presentation to a local government New Zealand conference in May 2024 by Auckland lawyer Frana Divich, who told councillors from the Waikato and Bay of Plenty that the New Zealand Chief Justice way back in 2019 predicted recourse to the courts for climate change harm will increase, and that the Supreme Court anticipated that parties will increasingly resort to public law remedies in light of international treaties and agreements. And to underline the potential cost to councils, Divich's presentation stated that there are some 68,000 buildings in the way of potential sea rise, along with 133,000 people, 5 airports, 2,000 kilometres of roads, and 46 kilometres of railway. And further to that, she confidently predicted that the near certainty that climate change is leading to more severe and more frequent extreme weather events, it's likely there are going to be claims brought for failing to implement climate adaption measures. In short, if the public have been assailed by the media with alarming stories of a climate crisis, so too have the lawyers been frightening our local councils with stories of climate litigation. And so in response to those threats nationwide, government departments and the Environmental Defence Society have been busy writing a plethora of reports on the subject of managed retreat, so that it's possible to move people out of the way before it's too late. And inside those, they've come up with two scenarios. The first being what they call a purely voluntary system, where there are offers of compensation that may expire after a period of time. And the second option, they say, is a system that contains a mixture of voluntary and mandatory parts, in which people should not be able to choose to stay once the retreat process ends, and that choice would likely be limited to when to leave rather than whether to leave. But also, if you're planning on moving people off their land for a disaster that hasn't yet happened, you have to at least provide some evidence. And for that, until the Climate Adaption Act comes to pass, currently we look at the Resource Management Act, which tells us that the New Zealand Coastal Policy Statement is the secondary legislation that must be followed. And in that, it states in Policy 24 that councils should identify areas in the coastal environment that are at high risk of being affected over at least 100 years, taking into account national guidance and the best available information on the likely effects of climate change. And so that's the point that this whole topic of managed retreat planning hinges on: the likely effects of climate change over the next 100 years. And it's also what brings us here, to the Kapiti Coast, just north of Wellington, because this is one of the places where those guidelines are now being put into practice, as the Kapiti Coast District Council undertakes their climate adaption process in a program of work called Takatai Kapiti, in which the council have employed international consultants Jacobs to write a series of climate hazard reports to predict the effects of future climate change, that sea level rise, inundation and erosion. And as part of that, they've produced a report that includes possible outcomes, which also includes the possibility of managed retreat. And to support that, an interactive map has also been provided, showing just how much of the coast Jacobs believe is going to be eroded and inundated in the next 100 years. And when you look at it, it's alarming for anyone who lives there. And so that's what brings us to this community hall in Paikakariki. Because a community group named CALM, which stands for Calm Alarmist Law Madness, says that this process, all these reports and policies, and their attempt to predict the next 100 years, is nothing but a closed loop, an echo chamber designed to prove with implausible science the climate catastrophe, to justify the predetermined solution of managed retreat. And the real world outcome of all of this, they say, is the harming of their homes and businesses.
Hi everybody, thank you for coming tonight. Now, just to give you a little bit of background, the Kapiti Coast has been divided into five adaptation zones. This is by Kapiti District Council and also CAP, which was appointed by the council. CAP stands for Coastal Advisory Panel. That is headed by a chairperson, Mr. Bolger, our 35th Prime Minister.
So I'm going to talk about relative sea level, what it is, how it's measured, how it's estimated, and what Jim's folks are using, heavily reliant on the Ministry for Environment's guidance. It's called the sea rise methodology. It's novel, and despite the fact that it was rushed into policy, it hasn't been able to be passed by the peer review. So they submitted it to a journal, a big international journal, in July last year, and it's been kicked back.
The end game with CAP could be managed retreat. So yeah, we feel that the Jacobs report, which includes extreme and implausible modelling relating to sea level rise, needs to be investigated further because our homes are at risk and our businesses are at risk too.
Okay, let's start with, what do you think of the Takarai Kapiti process?
Oh look, I think it's all just a predetermined outcome really. It's all just a performance.
Why do you say that?
Because if you look at it, they'd already set it up so that they could have their desired outcome. By using extreme modelling, they're going to get the outcome that they want, which is managed retreat to move us all away from the coast.
When you say they're using extreme modelling to reach a predetermined outcome, what is it that you mean by that?
Because they're using RCP 8.5, which is the most extreme outcome. There's a 1% chance of it ever happening. Even the IPCC has come out and said that it can't be used as modelling because it's implausible. But the Ministry for the Environment shouldn't even be pushing the most extreme scenario, and this is going to harm our community. It already is, because they have put notations on all of our LIM reports which reference the Jacobs report, which uses the extreme modelling. So this is having a very detrimental effect. House prices are on the way down. Insurance prices are skyrocketing at the moment. So the council really should be standing up and saying, this isn't right.
So as you can see, as is the case any time the words managed and retreat are used in the same sentence, there is a deep distrust. But that's a distrust that the Kapiti Coast District Council say is unfounded, that all they're doing is fulfilling obligations under their district plan, and that there is no plan of mass evacuation due to climate change.
Okay, let's start with, what is Takarai Kapiti, and what is it that you're trying to achieve with this process?
So if you think about Takarai Kapiti, you think about Takarai. It's about the shoreline. It's about understanding the challenges that we face here that is not unique to us here on Kapiti Coast. Everyone is facing the same issues of how we deal with climate change. We want to leave something for our generations. But it's really important that when we think about those generations, what we are leaving is livable.
It's about how do we maintain the life that we know and love. And so when you think about coastal risks and hazards, there's two things that we're thinking about. It's erosion and inundations. That means we can't do a one size fits all. So the reason we've done adaptation areas is we've really tried to use the information we have to hand to break up our district so that we can get a bit more specific about those impacts and give everybody a chance to have their say looking at the evidence.
District planning is very much between a rock and a hard place. I mean, we've got national, through the RMA, functions as a district council that we need to be managing risks, natural hazard risks. And we have things like the New Zealand Coastal Policy Statement, as I said, that says we need to be looking out for at least 100 years when we're thinking about how to do that.
Okay, but are you considering, as you do this, the uncertainty that it's causing, especially around house prices and insurance premiums?
Look, I absolutely understand that people's houses are their main investments, and it certainly is a major consideration. There is no appetite to create some kind of an alarmist setup at all. But what we do have to do as a council is plan for the future. I would hope that insurers would look at a council that's being proactive at looking at the future planning, that would help everybody to have the best possible outcomes when it comes to the value of their homes and insurability.
The idea of managed retreat scares a lot of people, but my understanding of this process is that it's also supposed to find the adaptation measures that will keep that outcome off the radar for as long as possible. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, so what are the trigger points for managed retreat? Because I think that's where a lot of the fear comes from.
I completely agree. The threshold point is, at what stage do we say, uh-oh, this has moved significantly, or it's moved to a level where we think we need to do something? So that would essentially be the trigger point to say, okay, we've talked to the community. When we get to this threshold, the trigger that is pushed might be more sand dune planting. We need to protect our sand dunes. That would be our first sort of step in protecting the community. We don't have a plan of mass evacuation, mass managed retreat. It's just not on the cards. Not at this stage. None of the science, none of the feedback from the community suggests that that's something that we want to do. So I can assure you, and perhaps, alleviate some of the concerns that people have, that is not the focus or the purpose of this piece of work.
And that may be so, but the problem still remains. If managed retreat laws pass, the Jacobs Report could be used to justify managed retreat. And so when CALM want to articulate their concerns, they bring in Sean Rush, who's a climate researcher, lawyer and former Wellington City Councillor. But even more importantly, he's also served as an expert reviewer for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC. And he says the biggest problem with the Jacobs Report is the use of the IPCC 8.5 model that is supposed to only be used for stress testing and not for policy making. Because he says it predicts an implausible rise in sea levels. And he says you only need to look at the tide gauge data in the Wellington region to see that it's implausible.
So the Jacobs Report uses IPCC estimates. So you've got your low side, you've got your high side, and you've got your middle paths. And we're looking more likely at the middle path at the moment. But that model actually starts at 2005 and starts giving milestones at 2020, 2030, 2040. Well, we can look at actually what happened from 2005 to 2020, and it records a sea level increase that is 550% higher than what actually happened. So we can look at what these guys are saying happened at Queen's Wharf, where the tide gauge is for Wellington, and we can look at what the tide gauge says. And one says that you expect 11 centimetres of sea level rise, and what we actually got was 2 centimetres.
Okay, so where's the fault here? Is it with Jacobs, or is it the models?
Yep.
Or is it both?
Yeah, I just really want to be fair. They are using the toolkit that the Ministry for the Environment have told them to use, and they're coming up with these outlandish sort of claims of sea level rise. But so the Ministry for Environment, that's where we need to be focusing our attention, because they're accepting this very, very novel science around soil movement and then adding it on to the extreme views of sea level rise that have come out of the IPCC. You know, when you are told year after year after year that sea level will be at a certain level by 2100, and actually it's still making incremental rises that are reflective of the 1990s, the 1970s, you start thinking, well, for us to actually get to that peak in 2100, the acceleration doesn't just go like this now, it's going like this, and we're still not seeing it. You know, one of the great scientists of the 20th century, climate scientists, talked about how observations and theory need to walk hand in hand. We can look at the theoretical model from 2005 to 2020 and see that it is not just a little bit wrong, it is 550% wrong. And we can look at what the average tells us, which is how, you know, we normally would do extrapolations forward, what's the average of the last 30, 40 years on any other sort of aspect, and you can see that it works.
And that point about observed data is a good point, because we're talking about something we can see. And on the Kapiti Coast, what has been seen is 6,000 continuous years of observed history that says the shoreline there is actually accreting, that is, growing, not receding. And the IPCC 8.5 model actually backs that up, as it shows that for the next 30 or 50 years, the trajectory of sea level rise will be about the same as it was for the past 30 or 50 years. It's what comes after that, Sean Rush says, that's implausible. Furthermore, there's people around like this, Warwick Wyatt, who lives on the beach in an area that the Jacobs Interactive map says will have its sand dunes eroded and its land inundated under the IPCC 8.5 modelling. But Warwick Wyatt is also a retired surveyor who's lived here since 1976, when a major storm blew through and made him wonder if his house would wash away with it. And so, being a surveyor, he began measuring and drawing what he saw, and now he has a map built on 50 years of observed data. And what it shows is simply a continuation of the accretion of the past 6,000 years, which is something many say points out the problem with the Jacobs modelling.
Well, in 1976, when I was about to build a small house here, the water was coming through that gate there. I thought, goodness, what's happening here? And I then read the scientific report that said that 6,000 years ago, so the sea was over by the motorway, it was 3 km down, half a metre a year. Is that going to change? No, I thought. So I went ahead and built. And in that period of time, now look what's happened. Not only has that slope from the gate straight down to the beach is gone, but the dunes have risen at least 3 metres high. All that has happened in that period of time. And that's extended from the north of the Cuspid at Paraparam all the way through to Otaki. So our house, that's our property boundary there. And at that point of time, the beach was around here. In 1976, there was a huge storm and it cut back into a cut better here.
Can you show me where's the land in 1976? Can you draw your finger along it?
Up there and over there. Okay. Started taking a surveying point of what was happening, and over that period of time, accretion started to occur, which we've measured, and that's how it's come to. So it's at this point of time, it's right on at this point here. So this whole area here is all what's accreted in that particular point of time. There's about 24 metres of accretion since 1976. And so we've gone from an area which was 20 metres from our boundary to something like 45 to 50 metres out here of the accretion over that particular point of time.
Where's the sea at?
The sea is way over here, 105 metres from here. So this is the mean high water mark here. So at low tide, it's in excess of 100 metres away. But the plan doesn't lie, and that's what it is. So, and the various storms we've had have been measured as well over a period of point of time, but it shows that the accretion is still continuing.
So what you're showing is something that the Jacobs report could never show, right?
That's right. And in my surveys down the beach, I'm continually showing on my plan that the beach is not getting lower or anything, it's actually getting higher. and the low tide still goes out to an excess of 140 metres from the mean high water mark. So those situations haven't changed.
So what is it that those Jacobs Report graphs and models are showing? What is it that they're depicting?
Well, to be honest, they're showing some sort of technical idea which just doesn't exist. It's as simple as that. So, well, this is it. Yeah, we have no intention of leaving here. So this is some method or mood by the council to try and get everybody to up and go. I won't be the only one left that will be arguing that, and will be wanting to stay, and we'll argue that no matter what it takes, yeah.
But this is also the point where this story gets darker than any New Zealander could imagine, because Warwick Wyatt, if he's here long enough, might never even have the option of fighting an order for managed retreat. Because built on the media's claims of a coming war with nature, and their alarming predictions of temperatures that will threaten the extinction of humanity, and the models that the likes of the Jacobs Report use to predict things that most people won't be around to see, are all those government and lobby group reports that I mentioned earlier. And inside those, below the confident assertions that climate catastrophe is unavoidable, and below the outlining of the idea that people will need to be forced to move before disaster strikes, the concepts for the laws that underpin all of that are being framed in the debate for the new Climate Adaption Act that would stop Warwick Wyatt refusing to move in the event of managed retreat. The first way they propose to do it is, as we've already seen, the two options for managed retreat, both voluntary and mandatory. But if you still don't want to leave, the Ministry for the Environment are also proposing that among the options, stronger powers are needed to acquire land by agreement that supports the compulsory acquisition of land, or a power to retire land by cancelling its title. That's right, under these laws, your land could be taken from underneath you with little more than a report from a company like Jacobs. Furthermore, the Ministry for the Environment recommend that for people who refuse to leave their properties, a change of law is needed so essential services could be withdrawn, so they could be coerced to leave, which currently they're not allowed to do. For example, councils currently must provide water services, and there's only a limited power to close small water services, but only following a referendum that receives the support of 75% of those eligible to vote. That law will go. Likewise, electricity distributors cannot generally cease to supply line function services to consumers. Cessation is allowed in limited circumstances, but only after a fire or an earthquake, and they can only continue as long as the reason for the cessation continues. And therefore, the report says, the withdrawal of services is therefore a necessary part of the decision to retreat. That's the Ministry for the Environment's words in their own report. Our government is now in the business of writing laws for compulsory land acquisition in preparation for disasters that haven't yet happened. And if you don't leave, they want the power to coerce you out of your home by withdrawing essential services. And so that's why the Jacobs Report and the Takatai Kapiti Report are so important to the residents in Kapiti. Because no matter how well-meaning the council is in preparing them, what reports like the Jacobs Report do is justify the concept of managed retreat, with predictions that no one will ever be around to verify. But in the meantime, it will also be used to draft laws designed to move people off their land on the basis of those very reports. But at least in Kapiti, while the council does their work, there's a debate to be had based on those reports. Elsewhere in the country, however, in Westport, recent flooding has caused the national media to declare the town the front line of the so-called climate crisis. And that has been enough for the mayor of Westport, Jamie Klein, to bypass writing even one report into the causes of the floods and declare instead climate change the problem and managed retreat the solution.
Heather Duplessy-Allen. Now, this next story may sound at first like I'm making it up, but I promise you I'm not. An urban design company has come up with a plan to protect Westport from flooding by actually moving the whole town up a hill. Jamie Klein is the mayor of Bullen. He's with us now. Hey, Jamie.
Good evening, Kitty. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. To quote Queen, Jamie, is this real life or is this just fantasy?
Look, it is real life, but I think the key word there is gradually. And having a plan, and having a master plan in particular, creates effectively an insurance policy for Westport for the 20, 50, 100 years in the future.
The plan is to begin developing land near Westport, high above the Buller River, which is the source of the town's flooding. For his part, Mayor Klein is not saying he wants to pick up the whole town and move it all at once, but that the plan is to protect the current town with walls and stop banks while beginning to develop an area outside the town away from the flood zone for the future. That's not stopped the media, though, telling everyone that the cause of this is climate change, and insinuating that managed retreat is the only answer.
Can you engineer your way out of climate change?
Look, no, not forever. And all the science and the expertise would tell us that.
And this field, these fields, these paddocks, which look nondescript and ordinary, contain the seeds of an audacious possibility, a future beyond the floodplains.
So this is the future we're standing in front of here?
Well, it could be. It has to play a part.
But since managed retreat is meant to be about being community-led and not just what the media thinks, what do the locals say? Well, according to one group named Save Buller, when you ask why the floods are happening, you find out that the media is omitting some pretty big details. Most glaringly, they say, there has been no report written investigating the causes of the floods, and so no one can say categorically that climate change is to blame. Yet that's the position that the council's taking. And also, they say, the council has even started taking ideas from all those government reports and is already discussing cutting off basic services to convince people to move.
We've got a council driven by the mayor who focuses intensely on climate change and has attributed the recent floods to exactly that, without any further inquiry into the causes of that flood, and so has since employed people at great expense to come up with a plan, and the plan is in draft, it's in principle, it's not been approved yet. Half the town doesn't even know about it yet, but the mayor has been on national television and media stating that Westport will have to relocate over time.
That's managed retreat.
Yes.
Yes, there is a $500,000 master plan to move the town to an area of Crown land which is 17 metres above the Buller River. They say, yes, that could be just, you know, voluntary. But for the higher risk areas, it would be a mandatory mechanism. And some of the councillors were not happy with this. But one councillor actually said that at some stage, maybe the council would have to stop services to properties deemed unsafe. So that really sounds a lot like being forced off your property, doesn't it?
Mm. So if it's not climate change, what is it?
The rainfall that fell in 2021 was excessive. We've had excessive rainfall in the past, and we've coped with that. But this rainfall in 2021 fell on a landscape that had been altered by man and is controlled by two rather inept councils that are neglected to maintain our protection walls on rivers and to adapt to the changing landscape caused by the alteration of the Westport Port.
And that is the key point, that while the climate change version of the story has the media traction, it doesn't actually have any proof. And what the Save Buller group say is that the most likely reason for the floods are actually man-made problems. The first problem, they say, is that when the Buller River sends huge amounts of water through Westport to the sea as it did during the floods, the natural overflow channel known as the Orawaiti River got more water than usual. Because at Organs Island, where the Buller and Orawaiti rivers diverge, sediment had blocked the Buller River, and lack of forestation had allowed too much water into the Orawaiti, causing it to be diverted away from the natural outflow of the Buller River and flood the farmland along the Orawaiti River. This has since been rectified by clearing the build-up and reforesting Organs Island, but what hasn't been fixed is the railway causeway further up the Orawaiti that acts as a wall, pushing the Orawaiti overspill into the suburbs of Westport. and of the water that does make it under the railway bridge there, it's fed into the Orawaiti Lagoon, where some of it floods the town. This, the Save Bullet team says, is the main man-made problem. Because when the town was built in the 1800s, as can be seen from this 1938 map, the Orawaiti did not feed into a lagoon. It fed directly out into the sea. And when you overlay that 1938 map onto today's satellite imagery, you can see how it happened. It appears that after the famous Westport tipheads were built in the late 1800s to clear the port entrance, then added onto over the years, it appears that they've caused a massive amount of accretion that is actually today farmland that blocks the Orawaiti's natural exit point to the sea and forces it another 4 kilometres up the coast. But without any extra gradient on the river, the water doesn't flow nearly as freely. And when you look back at satellite imagery as recent as 2013, you can see clearly the resulting buildup of the silt at the river mouth, which causes the Orawaiti Lagoon to fill up, and in times of heavy rain, it also floods the town. And so for the Save Bullet team, the lack of a report into these issues is not only glaring, but also a seemingly deliberate attempt to justify managed retreat.
These are the reasons water flooded the town in 2021, and the mayor is responsible for part of this, for not seeing that these systems have been altered by man, have been modified to stop the town flooding.
The other thing that strikes me about Westport is that Westport town itself is actually further away from the sea than it was 100 years ago. Yet they're still trying to tell you that you need to move because the sea's coming to get you.
That's a good way of putting it, because I was saying that earlier. Westport is undergoing natural retreat. Westport is a kilometre further from the sea than it was when I was a child.
And this sort of experience isn't unique to Westport. While we were making this documentary, another community over in the Selwyn district near Christchurch also got in touch to tell us how their council was using the same excuse of unproven climate change to try and evict people from their 130-year-old settlement on the banks of Lake Ellesmere, known as the Selwyn Huts. In that case, the residents were able to fight the council and show that any effects of climate change were so far in the future that there is no certainty to the claims and therefore no justification to move them on. And so far they've won. But in Westport, the fight hasn't even really begun because most of the talk is being done in the ever-supportive media. So what do you want the council to do?
Well, we would like an independent inquiry as to what caused the 2021 floods, because the council are saying it's climate change, and well, if it is, then we want the evidence for that. But they need to examine all the different factors that would have contributed. If it's climate change, okay, so be it. But where's the proof?
But they must have proof.
Well, I've asked for that proof. I've written letters asking for the proof, and they won't release it. I had conversations with their team from Canterbury University and their local climate guru, and they are saying, we're scientists, you've got to believe us. We've got doctorates. And these are the people that said they didn't have any data and told me NIWA did, whereas NIWA in writing have told me they have no reliable long-term data on rising sea level or rising groundwater in Westport. So it made me think either they are trying to mislead me or they've been indoctrinated.
One thing that they keep on talking about when they talk about managed retreat, they talk about it needs to be community-led. Do you feel this is a community-led process?
Yeah. Definitely not. No, they poke fun at us because, as Paul has described, he attended several of these informative meetings from Karamea down to Punakaiki. Basically, all they did there was ask people, what do you like living here? It was a talking down at people. There was no real valuable information. There was no effort in providing data. So that is the sum total of their community involvement or engagement. It's pathetic, really. It speaks badly to us. So it's not community-led whatsoever. The community is being led by the nose.
And if there's anything that's a constant in this story about managed retreat, it's that feeling of being led by the nose. that's been a part of our story right from its beginnings in Matata, where the wounds are still raw even after all of these years. But it's also that feeling too that's breathing life into the term community-led, because as the process of selling the concept of managed retreat continues around the country, the actual community is becoming aware that laws are being drafted to change land titles in preparation for weather events that haven't yet happened, and that hazard lines are being drawn on maps based on models that affect house prices and insurance premiums. And in Kapiti, where the Calm Group's first meeting drew around 60 people, its latest meeting now draws about 300, which is a number even the Mayor, Janet Holbro, and her Chief Executive, Darren Edwards, can't ignore.
Good evening, and thank you for coming along to Calm's third community meeting. We're concerned residents who feel we haven't been listened to. We believe that the Council and Coastal Advisory Panel have come up with alarmist science to justify extreme climate modelling, which will lead to unnecessary and potentially harmful consequences for our community. And tonight, we want to show you why we say that.
Councils are required by law to prepare for the future. The challenge, though, is to bring communities along with us. And the turnout tonight shows me that we haven't done that as well as we could have. Can you hear me out? Do you want to hear me out, or would you like me to stop?
So when I was on the Wellington City Council, what I did observe is that most of the most controversial things that were being imposed on our community did not come from our community.
If you use RCP 8.5, you're actually misrepresenting what is really a 1 in 1,000 year risk as a 1 in 100 year risk.
None of the work we've done in this space has affected property values so far. That is what we were told by QV last year.
But what they don't tell you is that the alarmist science they use in their reports may go onto your limbs. And when the insurance companies read that alarmist science, they will likely withdraw from insuring our homes. And we have evidence of this already in our next slide. So this is an example of a letter. It says here, for Eatwell Place, based on our data, we won't insure due to the coastal hazard. And that's Tower.
So we've talked a lot tonight about the concerns around insurance. And I was as shocked as the rest of the room to see that email up there. Because we've been told by the Insurance Council that insurance hasn't been cancelled in coastal hazard zones. Council and the panel have been challenged that the technical information isn't correct. The problem is, we're not dealing in absolutes. There is no completely verifiable or correct information, but we have information which we are required to use by the Ministry for the Environment.
And that is where the argument has landed, in those words shouted from the cheap seats, no you're not. Because Janet Holbro is right when she says they're expected to take into account national guidance from the Ministry for the Environment. It says so in the New Zealand Coastal Policy Statement. But she's also wrong, because in a letter from the Ministry for the Environment dated 8 November 2023, they confirm that the Coastal Policy Statement is the law, but that none of the national guidance documents are. Which of course is confusing, but it's also how the Ministry for the Environment covers themselves legally, while also getting her to use models like the implausible IPCC 8.5 model. Because that's in their guidelines, even though they know that the IPCC states that it's an implausible worst-case scenario, which means it's not consistent with the likely effects of climate change that the New Zealand Coastal Policy Statement requires. And the community knows that, and now they're also letting Janet Holbro know as well.
But we have information which we are required to use by the Ministry for the Environment.
But also, the community is tired of arguing. And so another Kapiti community group named CREW, which stands for Coastal Ratepayers United, took the term community-led to a whole new level by raising $20,000 amongst themselves to commission a report from Waikato University climate change researcher Dr. Willem DeLonghi. and his brief was to present the likely effects of climate change over at least 100 years. And when he presented it at the CREW annual general meeting in November 2024, the result summed up the problem, that it's not only the IPCC 8.5 model that's implausible, so is attempting to predict the weather in 100 years.
And so they've tried to predict the risk by saying what things will be like 100 years from now. All of the studies, and I've referenced them in the report, say that we can't predict things that well out to that time. In fact, the IPCC acknowledged that, so they talk about projections. That means for it to happen, all of their assumptions must be met. Because if we have something they say is exceptionally unlikely, probability of less than 1% in 100 years' time, it has assumptions. And those assumptions are also mostly exceptionally unlikely. If you take 1% probability, and we have two assumptions with 1% probability, we're already down to 0.01% probability. If we have three assumptions, 0.0001%. In terms of the worst case RCP 8.5, we are looking at more than 10 assumptions. So the probability of it being right is equivalent to the probability of me winning Lotto tonight. Keeping in mind I haven't bought a ticket. It's implausible. It's exceptionally unlikely. We shouldn't consider it in terms of assessing likely climate effects.
And so this is where we're at now, where some people think that it's all inevitable, that the coastlines are going to be swallowed up by rising seas.
Humans are to blame.
How dare you?
While others point out that there isn't much evidence of that happening and the models being used to justify it all are wildly implausible. And the whole thing appears to be built on a media firestorm.
This is a surprise to a lot of people. We're told every day that sea levels are rising, and they even use wartime language like we're under attack. How is it that what you have to say is so different?
Well, I would say climate is changing, and it always has. Sea level has been rising since the Little Ice Age. That's true. It's the jump to say that we're under attack. And I note that the analysis done for the Homeland Security Department of the United States government indicates that there is no threat to human existence. There is no global catastrophe evident. And so all of this attack, crisis and everything else, as far as I'm concerned, is political, and it's not supported by the evidence.
And it's not hard to see why people distrust the process. The consulting companies who write the reports also profit from undertaking the climate adaptation engineering projects that their reports recommend. And the scientists who back it all up only get paid if they keep backing it up. But even more concerning is that the New Zealand Taxpayers Union has also recently revealed that the lobby groups like the Environmental Defence Society, who shape the policy of managed retreat, are actually funded by the Ministry for the Environment, creating a closed loop of problems, reactions, and solutions, while the ratepayers pay for it all, not only in the invoices for the reports, but also through lowering of house prices and increasing of insurance premiums. And all the while, there's nothing but accreting shorelines, man-made flooding, and projections based on assumptions, based on assumptions, based on assumptions.
The Ministry for Environment, you know, that's where we need to be focusing our attention, because they're accepting this very, very novel science around soil movement and then adding it on to the extreme views of sea level rise that have come out of the IPCC. Now, the IPCC are now walking away from those extreme views for policy making, and the Ministry for Environment know this. But nevertheless, they want to keep a hold of these big scenarios, because if they model the middle of the road scenarios, there's no catastrophe. Scientists lose their funding. Suddenly the Ministry of Environment aren't really important anymore. It's all a bit of a circle, really, but you tell the big scary story. Politicians get involved, lobby groups get involved. Meanwhile, the tide gauge keeps telling us the same thing happened last year as it did 60 years ago.
But by far the biggest concern New Zealanders expressed during the making of this film was the concern that the Ministry for the Environment is using the climate debate to alter property rights in this country forever. And their own reports say it in plain English. They want stronger powers to acquire land, either by voluntary means or compulsory. and they want the power to cut off essential services to compel people to leave. And that is a concept that will change New Zealand forever, because it will also mean the end to property rights as we know it in this country. And many see that as nothing more than a land grab if it's allowed to happen. Okay, so that is Managed Out, the story of managed retreat in New Zealand. Marie, your first thoughts after watching that?
Oh, well, the first thought is I definitely have to bone up on what's going on in my local area, particularly as I live in a coastal zone. And I think anybody, if you are a homeowner and you live anywhere near the coast, and not even actually the coast, to be honest with you, I think the example, the very first example of the landslip that came down through Matata, that I think also signifies that you could be living somewhere like Esk Valley, which isn't necessarily right by the coast. Anywhere where you could be impacted by any sort of natural disaster whatsoever could potentially be at risk by local or national governments saying to you, you can no longer live there on your land anymore.
Yeah, if they can write a report about whether it's coastal inundation, sea rise levels, they could also write a report about flooding, couldn't they?
Absolutely. And I, you know, I'm from Gisborne, and there's been floods through the plains of Gisborne for time immemorial. And there are also thousands of people that live on those plains. And, you know, if you go to buy a home anywhere, you do your due diligence, but they're now asking you to crystal ball gaze 100 years into the future. I mean, this is, it's
absurd.
Practical. It is absurd.
There's one last point that I want to make up, and this is probably the last thing that we'll talk about before we sign off for tonight after sharing the film with everybody tonight. The point that I want to just bring up just very briefly is the main point of the film, that these laws that are being drafted, these ideas that are being debated by our government, by our Ministry for the Environment significantly, is this idea that we can change our laws to take people's land from underneath them compulsorily. And then if people still don't leave, changing the law to make it so that you can coerce people into leaving by taking away essential services. To me, this is the dark part of this story, that New Zealand is really, there is no choice. We have to push back against this. And I think if there's one message that I want people to hear from seeing this film, it's that message. We cannot allow this to happen. This destroys property law in New Zealand forever.
And central governments have actually seen what can happen if you take away services, things that people find essential, how coercive that can actually be. They've exercised that power over the last 5 years, and it's really, really potent. And I think that they're using it again to manipulate people into doing what it is that they want to do, regardless of what their wishes are, and especially trampling on their property rights. And it is, again, if you are a property owner, this is something that you need to be aware of. It is concerning.
Where did it come from that our government seems to think that that's their job these days, to coerce people, to take away their property? They're literally trying to write this into law. I don't get it. Their job, from my understanding, was to administer our country on our behalf, not to write laws about how they can take away our property and then coerce us to leave when we don't want to go, when we rightfully say, nah, I want to stay where I am, thanks very much. How did this happen?
Well, it's amazing how, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and I think that this is what we're seeing here. And look, you're asking the wrong person because you're about to open the neo-Marxist Pandora's box, and we haven't got the time for that today, but I think that this is all right. There is an ideological core with much of this. And I think as people, we've, especially New Zealanders, we're actually very gentle. We don't speak up and stand up for our rights, and I think we need to. I think we need to be a little bit more vocal about it, because sometimes those who are in charge don't necessarily have our best intentions at heart. They have theirs.
Okay, well, I think we've got a future subject for a future episode of RCR 360 somewhere in that. But in the meantime, we have to leave it there now. Marie, let's throw it over to you for the rundown on what's been happening in the RCR universe, or what is in the RCR universe on this topic for people to go and explore more. And then I'll come back and wrap up the show after that.
Right, thanks, Alistair. And this is the rundown for this week's Focused Manage Retreat. If tonight's premiere raised big questions for you, you're not alone. Manage Retreat is one of the most consequential and controversial issues facing coastal communities across New Zealand. And it doesn't matter where you sit politically. No one wants to lose their home, face plummeting property values, or be told insurance is no longer an option because of decisions based on extreme modelling or missing data. So, if you want to dig a little deeper into the background, hear from people directly affected, and learn how others are taking action, we've got a library of interviews ready for you to explore. Here are some of the few highlights. Now, featured in tonight's documentary, we have Salema Padempsey from the Coastal Ratepayers United. Salema exposed the missing paper trail behind the Jacobs report and the impact of flawed coastal adaptation plans on LIM reports. She's been on the front lines of the battle with the Kapiti Coast District Council. Tanya Lees and Caroline Evans from Kapiti Calm. Tanya and Caroline spoke powerfully about confronting council over its coastal advisory panel report and what it means for communities caught in the crossfire of flawed modelling and policy overreach. Desna Bruce, Paul Reynolds, and Adriana DeRuiters-James from Save Buller. These local heroes from Westport are pushing back hard against plans to relocate their town. Their message is clear. The science isn't settled, the data is flawed, and residents deserve better. Sean Rush, lawyer and expert commentator, offered legal insights into what happens when policy oversteps and how communities can protect their rights. More voices you should also hear are Craig Little, Mayor of Wairoa. He spoke out on flood protection failures and why local communities need more control over their own risk management. And Elizabeth Munt, Selwyn District Councillor, advocated for her residents against alarmist modelling and vested interests, putting people ahead of politics. You can find all of these interviews by typing Managed Retreat into the search bar on the app or the website, or by heading to the Climate Change topic section for a broader view. So you can also take action and share the story. If tonight's documentary moved you or opened your eyes, share it. Share the short clips we'll be posting from this episode on social media, in community Facebook groups, or anywhere where coastal New Zealanders are gathering online. Every coastal community deserves to understand what's happening, what's at risk, and what they can do to stand up. With awareness comes social pressure, and with pressure comes change. And of course, RCR is grassroots funded. We rely on people like you to keep these stories alive and accessible. If you value what we do, head to rcr.media and click donate or join RCR to support our work. And that, Alistair, has been the rundown for this week.
Thanks, Marie. Look, I just want to finish by saying this, that after making this film for the past 1.5 years, I've come to the point where I feel sorry for the real scientists out there and the real city councillors and the real well-meaning environmentalists, because this sort of story explains the methods that are used to prey on their good intentions. And in this case, what I see are city council people who simply want to help protect their communities being saddled with data sets and rule books that only ever point one way. And it's dishonest. But I also honestly don't think it's the fault of those council workers. It comes from higher up. And so I'm really glad that we've been able to show this film tonight, because every disagreement can be solved by talking. And hopefully by talking tonight, we're going to get more people talking. And even people on the opposite ends of the argument who may disagree. But they're all well-intentioned. So if we can get them talking, then the bad actors will become irrelevant. And so you also have a part to play in this. If you like what you see tonight, if you like what you saw tonight, please do share the film and get on the RCR website at rcr.media and donate, because the more support we get, the more content like this we can make and the more people we can get talking. My name is Alastair Harding and you've been watching RCR 360. On behalf of Murray Buskey and myself, thank you for watching. See you next week and bye for now.